on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. I appreciate you being with me. And today is Tuesday, December 8th, 2015, last month of the year. And of course, I try to help you become a better investor. That's the job of this show. There's no secret formulas or secret instant wealth gainers methods. There's no secrets. So I like to think about common sense should prevail. This is the kind of forum we're here. We talk about, we like to exchange ideas and answer questions on current events financially and try to help you answer any of those types of things that might come along, you know, about your 401k, your IRA, your retirement, your finances. You know, we try to connect with you if we can. We also do it through our conferences and webinars. And, I post market commentary several times a week on my website. Yesterday, I wrote about the concept of buying the rumor, selling the news. It's an old saying, and it refers to the tendency of the stock to rise or fall before earnings announcement, before the company announces earnings. But it also can be used for other types of announcements. For instance, what the Fed is doing. What will happen to the dollar once the Fed actually starts raising interest rates? And my thinking is that the dollar has already run up pretty good. It ran up all year, and now it's just recently run up for a little month or two pretty sharply. And because of that, why did it run up for that last month or two here? Well, because the Fed is kind of assuring us that they seem to be on a path to raise the rates on their next meeting. It was, you know, the Janet Yellen kind of hinted that that's what's going to happen. I mean, it was pretty clear to most investors, and that's why the rumor that they're going to raise the rates caused the dollar to go up. Now, what will the actual fact do when they actually raise the rates? They actually do that. Will that cause the dollar to go down? Buy the rumor, sell the news? Now, the problem with this, and we're going to see this next week is when they meet. We're going to see it actually happen in real time. But also, you know, the ECB president, they announced they were going to do some additional QE, and that everybody thought that that would do something to the dollar. But when they announced the actual movement of what they decided to do was a lot less than expected, and our dollar fell. Their currency went up against our dollar, and our dollar fell. So it is influenced by other factors, not just what the Fed does. So it's going to be hard to read it, but we'll see. When the Fed actually raises the rates, what will happen to the dollar in comparison to other currency? My theory is the dollar will probably fall. I'm not saying it's going to collapse or anything. I'm just saying it's going to fall. And, you know, eventually just start, I think, and I've said this before, long term, I think the dollar's going to go up against other currencies. But I think short term, once the Fed actually raises the rates, we might see a fall. Well, we're going to see if I'm right or wrong next week, aren't we? And, you know, if they raise the rates, I think the dollar won't go up. I think it will fall. I think the conventional wisdom, well, the rates will go up if interest rates go up, because that means that the Fed's fund rates goes up and all the other rates go up and our dollar looks much more attractive to foreign investors because they can make more money investing here than in their weak currency and their interest rates not going up. It's a theory. So we're going to see. Is it going to be interesting? Well, that was my market commentary this week. Remember, I do Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I do it every other day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That was Mondays. Okay, that's enough of that. Let's go ahead and get to the Q&A answer part of the Q&A part of the show. What money matters are on your mind? We'd like to talk about it. Let's hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. I am a podcast listener from New York, and I listen to you gentlemen every day. I wanted to ask you your opinion regarding investing in biotech stocks, considering the amount of heat they are taking by both political parties right now. I've been waiting a long time for the opportunity to invest in companies like Gilead and Celgene and Bristol Myers and J&J, quite a long list. If you had these stocks on your watch list, when would you think it might be a good time to pull the trigger? After the election, just before the election, or any time that you might suggest it might be good? Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Well, some of those are some of those are not biotech. Biotech, it refers to those stocks, usually smaller, faster growers kind of stocks, but not, you know, Bristol-Myers. You know, big drug companies, not a biotech. Pfizer, those kinds of companies are not biotech. And to be perfectly honest, I think you start thinking about buying them now, because the biotechs themselves got beat up, remember, not that long ago, a few months ago, and they seem to have started to come back. And I don't know if you want to wait for an election changeover necessarily. You buy stocks when they seem to be on sale. So the question is, are the ones that you're looking at, are they on sale? Are they reasonably priced? And we recently bought, not necessarily a biotech, but one who, you know, develops generic branded drugs, a company that does that. We recently bought that because we thought, man, look at the growth rate, look at the earnings growth, and the price is pretty cheap versus the PE. Return on equity is really good, and the numbers look really good. But if you look at the stock, you see it was trading, you know, much higher, 20 points higher in June, July than it is today. Then it hit a bottom in October, November, and it's starting to come back. So we thought, well, yeah, why wait? It looks like it's, you know, coming back. So it depends on the stock you're in. I think it has to be stock specific, and I don't think you should shy away from them when you think the market or the stock itself is on sale. Will they go down more? Sure, they could, but you look for the strong fundamentals, and there's a number of them that have pretty darn strong fundamentals that seem to be beat up for no good reason. Just my opinion. The analysts behind the argument against bonds may not be a valid reason for you to avoid them. The argument, you know, I don't know. Should you avoid them? I don't. I don't think you should. Four facts investors should know about bonds. That's going to be one of our main talking points today. Bonds can be complex. You would think they wouldn't be, but that's not necessarily true. There was some predictions out for 2016 by Deutsche Bank. And they're the most optimistic about our stock market for next year. But I got three others, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. What do they say about 2016? And what do you think the odds are for 2016 to be an up year? And I'll tell you this, the same odds almost apply to every year. Every year. So it does not help you. You know, but, and I also want to talk about revisiting reverse mortgages. And there's some arguments that we probably haven't discussed on the show, whether they're good or bad or different, whether you should use one. These arguments for using them. And the argument is for using them early, fast, soon as you can. Interesting arguments. I think I need to share it. And then a related talking point about why aren't mortgage rates higher? They should be higher in light of the Fed raising rates. Why aren't they? They're lower than they were 6 months ago. Why? What were those rates 6 months ago, and what are they today? Those are the things I'm going to talk about. What do you want to talk about? That's more interesting to me. The market was down today. The Dow was down 163 points. The NASDAQ was down only 4 points. I'm going to talk about that in a second. And the S&P down 13 points. Look at Google, Netflix, Amazon, and even Apple. If you look at those, three of those four stocks went up today. And since they're all four are huge, huge stocks, the only one that went down was Apple. It went down a nickel. That's why the NASDAQ only went down 4 points, because those four stocks are big cap stocks, big companies, and big priced companies. When they move, they kind of throw the weight around for the whole index. So if you look past those and you take them out, the market, the NASDAQ was in line with the Dow and the S&P. But those four, I find that so interesting that they held up so well today. Anyways, that's what happened to the market. Now, we've given back a lot of our big up day. Remember that big up day on Friday? We've given back a lot of it. Not all of it, but a lot of it. Maybe a little more than half, maybe. So, the market's still having a hard time breaking up against that ceiling it's been hitting all year long. Will we have a Christmas rally? Well, all I can tell you is that generally we do. The probability is we'll have it again, but it doesn't have to happen. There's no magic, it always happens kind of thing. No, it's just, it generally does. And, as time goes by, maybe after what the Fed does, maybe we'll see it then. We'll see. We don't know. No one knows. There's no predicting the market, everybody. My economic outlook for December will be going to Invest Talk Insider soon. Each month, we break down the data, offer some perspective on that. You can become an Invest Talk Insider for free. Just go to investtalk.com and sign up.
Hello, Justin. This is Rich in Fort Worth. What's your opinion on a couple of mutual funds I have in my IRA portfolio? The Matthews Asian Growth and Income Fund, as well as the Matthews Indian Fund. Both are down somewhat since the time I purchased them, and I just would like your opinion on their long-term prospects. Thank you. Enjoy the show.
Well, Asia, which includes India, by the way, India is part of Asia, has been in a pretty tough environment ever since China slowed down its economic growth. And that has not changed, and it's still the same. We even had economic numbers out of China this morning showing that their exports fell again for like the fourth or fifth month in a row. Imports went up a little bit, but not a lot, but went up a little bit. And therefore, the issue is everything surrounding them, all the trading partners, which is all those other smaller Asian countries, are going to be impacted, and they have been impacted negatively. India is a little bit different. They're on a little bit different path than China, but they're influenced by China, but they're also very big. So they're doing a little bit better. For the future, China's in the process of trying to do whatever they can do to boost their economy. Their central banking government system, notice I described it a little bit different than our Federal Reserve, because ours is very clearly separate from the impact of the Congress and President. They do have an impact, but it's a separate entity. In China, it's more of one entity. And they are making a lot of different efforts to try to boost their economy. And I don't want to fight them. It's like, no, don't fight the Fed here. Don't fight them. So, frankly, I think that long-term, it's going to go up. Next year might be a bit difficult. I'm not seeing a lot of great growth from them because it's just not going to happen. But what will that do to their stock market? The economic growth may not be there, but will the stock market recover and start doing better? I think it's like our market. Pretty tough call. Our Invest Talk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I want to hear your questions, whatever they may be, as long as it's about money. Any money question is great. 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. It's really important to have a discussion with your children, setting goals and priorities, and putting a financial plan together. Strategies for financing your kids' college. That's one of our talking points for Wednesday's podcast. We hope you can join us then.
888-992-4278. Four facts investors should know about bonds. Four. just going to go over four. There's a lot of facts you should know, but four, these four are pretty important. And a little bit different take on looking at bonds. Let's talk about the yield curve. The yield curve is steep. Okay, when you buy a bond, you're going to get all your money back. If you buy that bond at par with the day they issue it, you're going to get all your money back plus all the interest, annual interest it's going to pay over the next, if you buy a 5-year, 10-year, let's say you buy a 10-year bond and you get a 10-year bond, what, pays 2.9%, I don't know, something like that. So a 10-year bond gives you 2.9%. As time goes by, that bond, 3 years go by, now you still have that 10-year bond, but now it's only 7 years left. If you went out and bought a 7-year bond, you would probably get less than you have now owning that 10-year bond, everything being equal and interest rates not changing dramatically. So every year that goes by, you're getting a higher and higher yield for that money, everything being equal. And so therefore that yield curve is steep. So when you get to year 9, you're still getting the maximum return on a 10-year bond. Now, that's assuming everything remains the same, which it doesn't. But who knows where interest rates are going to go? You don't know if it's going to go up or down. No one knows. No one knows that fact. So, you know, too many people think their interest rates are going to automatically go up. What if they don't? And in fact, we're looking at deflation, and that's another one of these four reasons. Deflation could push the rates down, and that's going to make your bond, that 10-year bond that you bought, make that bond look like it's going up in value because you can't get the yield that you got when you bought it, you know, time, a year, last year, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. If deflation pushes the yields down, that makes the bond value go up. Now, if you hold the bond to maturity, you're still going to just get your money. The value of that 10-year bond could go up and down over those 10 years. It can fluctuate depending on what the interest rates are doing in the environment outside of the bond. You know, because think about it. If interest rate, you're getting 3% for your 10-year bond, 3% a year, and now you can go out and buy, 2 years later, you can buy a 10-year bond and you can get 6%, and you wanted to sell your old bond, that value would be hugely down. You wouldn't get par because why would they buy it? No one's going to buy it unless it can offer a yield to maturity to at least 6%. And your bond's only paying 3, so they got to pay you less for the bond. So interest rates influence the value of your bond holdings, but remember, they always go back to par. You don't have to worry about it if you're just going to hold them to par. You're going to make your interest rate and get your money back. And finally, no one knows where the interest rates are going to go. People say that interest rates are going to go. I think the interest rates are going to rise over a long period of time. I think it's going to be extremely slow, glacial. But, you know, I've been saying interest rates are going to go up for years now, and I haven't. I've been wrong. Ever since the Federal Reserve said they were going to cut out QE, and then they didn't. And then when they actually did end it, you know, I'm saying, well, that should push interest rates up, and logic tells me it should, but it hasn't. We are in very unusual times. So when everybody believes that interest rates are going to go up, man, the contrarian in me wants to say, not necessarily, no. Maybe they're going to go down because everybody believes they're going to go up. So what if the Fed decides they don't want to raise the rates in the next 2 weeks? Maybe because of the commodities fall in the last few days could scare them. And the Fed has said they were going to do stuff or hinted strongly they were going to do something and not done it. So now I frankly think they're going to raise rates. I don't think nothing's going to change this first anticipation of the rate increase. I just don't. It would shock me if they decided not to raise rates. And I think it would shock the stock market. We'll see. Next week they meet? 15th and 16th is the days they meet. So I think that's next week. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Remember, we're going to talk about the bull market stampede through 2016, what the Deutsche Bank predicts, and they're the ones who are predicting the highest returns. But I also want to talk about what Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley think about 2016. And I'm going to talk about revisiting reverse mortgages. You remember what a reverse mortgage is? It's been, you got a lot of bad press, I think unjustly so, about reverse mortgages. I don't think they're bad. I just think they're an option. It might not be your first option, but there's been studies out that say, well, it might be a good management tool being a first option. So I want to discuss that. And then finally, why aren't the mortgage rates going higher? Why aren't they higher now than they were 6 months ago, knowing that what the Fed's going to do? And I'm going to talk about the rates and what they are. Interesting stuff. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. Coming up in the next half hour, what type of person needs a financial advisor? We'll talk about it in Invest Talk Personal. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. You can call right now.
This is Invest Talk for Tuesday, December 8th. We're here to help with any money matter. You may have a question about how to choose a mutual fund. What criteria is most important? Call 888-99-CHART with any money question.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is May. I'm a podcast listener. Love the show. I learned a lot about investing from you guys. Steve mentioned last week that he was in the insurance business before. So I want to ask his opinion about IUL and VUL, the index universal life or variable universal life, because somebody is pitching those products to me. So let me know what do you think about them. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, there's various types of life insurance. And this is an insurance program, the universal life, variable universal life, whole life, and term life. Universal life, whole life, and term life are the three basic types of life insurance offered by the insurance companies. And the insurance companies want to gather money. I mean, that's what they do. That's how they make a living, by gathering money. So years ago, they invented, you know, universal and whole life policies, which kind of act like a hybrid life insurance that they give you, a life insurance portion and investment portion of that premium that you pay. Term life, there's no investment at all. It's just the amount of life insurance you're buying for a set term, 5 years, 7 years. And the premium is the monthly premium is much cheaper because they don't pretend to be an investment. They don't pretend to be an investment tool of any kind. So when you pay a whole life or universal life, you pay into, and they have various structures, you know. You can buy universal life that acts just like a savings account. It doesn't necessarily have to be invested, but most of them are telling you that you can invest in the stock market with so much and it builds value over a period of time. And do I like them? No, I do not like them. I think that they are expensive. And I feel that, you know, if you wanted to be in the stock market, just go out and buy an index fund or, that's what they're doing. Don't think they're doing anything tricky, but they're charging you a lot of money if you buy it through a life insurance policy. My suggestion has always been, well, if you need life insurance, okay, and make sure you have a reason for life insurance. Go buy term life insurance for whatever the length and amount of insurance you want. Take the difference that you would pay in that premium for term life versus universal whole life. Take the difference in premium and invest it every month, just like you would if you paid the whole premium and whole life and universal life premium, the whole thing. Instead, just pay the difference and invest it. You'll be a lot further ahead. And I tried to convince my father-in-law this many years ago that why don't you do it this way? And he didn't. He bought the universal life and he thought it was a good idea. And tragically, his second wife passed away. Both his wives passed away, by the way. But she passed away before him. He's now 90. He collected on the life insurance. And, you know, one day he was telling me that, you know, this is a year, 2 years, 3 years afterwards, that it was a good idea that he bought that life insurance policy because he got the money. And then I said, well, Dad, how much was a premium? And he gave me the number. I said, well, let's figure out how much premium you paid over the years. And I figured out that his premium was almost a little bit, about 70% of the benefit of the policy. But that's without any return of that money over those, I think it was close to 10 years that he paid. No returns. I said, Dad, if you've even got 2% return, you'd be way ahead. Compounded every year. So, you know, you have to figure out these things mathematically. What is the smarter thing to do to make the most of your hard-earned dollars, to pay the least amount in fees and expenses of your hard-earned dollars? And I'm not saying that, you know, you shouldn't pay fees and expenses. That's how I make my living, through fees. But I'm saying that make sure you get your money's worth. Make sure that you understand what they are, what all the fees are, and all the tricks that they use on you to get your money. So be very, very careful when you buy life insurance. I did. That was my first 9 years of my career working for an insurance company in New York City. So, right across the street from AIG. I never worked for AIG, but, you know, there's a lot of insurance companies right in that same area. Financial companies are insurance companies. You know, they bring in premiums. How do you think Warren Buffett makes so much money? Brings in premiums and invests it. He brings in premiums all the time. And he lets the premiums build and wait till he gets a really good price for things. And then he buys. Yeah, he's got that great leverage of money coming in all the time. You know, that's very helpful when you're investing. Very helpful. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what do you want to talk about? What's on your mind? I'll talk about anything you want. Deutsche Bank said for 2016, they think the stock market, when I say stock market, the S&P 500, is going to go up 11%. And they say the main reasons why they believe this is buybacks, you know, where companies buy back their shares. They say just that alone should push the market up 11%, because when you buy back shares, earnings per shares go up. So the company actually earn more money simply by the buybacks. That's what they said. I think that's, you know, pretty generous. Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, much less. 1 to 2% is what they see in 2016. 1 to 2% return. Now, what area do they think they should be in that will work the best? They think the dollar is to continue to be strong, and therefore you should invest in financial stocks of some kind. We might want to revisit how inaccurate these predictions are. These banks have been pretty off. You know, I don't know. Remember what they're doing for a living. They're in the business. These are big commercial banks that are in the market. They want to push up prices. That's their goal, is to have prices go up. Their goal is not necessarily to predict exactly what's going to happen with an unbiased view. They're biased. Doesn't mean you're wrong. Just means that they're biased. You have to understand where they're coming from. And that's where they're coming from. Will the market go up? Well, do you know there's a 66% chance of the market go up next year? 66% chance. And before you get too excited about that, it's about the same every year. There's nothing magic about that. The market tends to go up. Tends to go up. Then you got your years like 2008 and first part of 2009. Yeah. And you got years like 2000. You know, huge down. You got those years too. But notice how many years up versus down. Let's go to JJ, Santa Clara. How you doing, JJ?
Hey, Steve. Good afternoon.
How you doing?
Good. I was looking at this stock, HRL, today, Hormel. And,
yes.
You know, it's got the exponential up curve, and I was just hoping you could talk about the technicals and maybe the sector in general.
Well, Hormel Foods processes meat and food products such as pork, turkey, stable foods, retail and food service markets. And so I think most people know who Hormel Foods are. And they're growing their earnings 8-9%. Sales have been a little weak, growing in the single digits the first two quarters of this year, most of last year. And this year, for the first quarter or two, in the most recent two quarters, are down. The sales were down 4-5%. But its stock has been shooting up and has done very well all year long, really. One of the better performers. I mean, at the beginning of the year, it was at 52 or 50, 52 and a half. Around 50, between 50 and 52. And today is at 77. That's a huge return for a year. Now in the last, 2 weeks, things skyrocketed from 68 to 77. I mean, that's very fast. So, JJ, you don't want to chase the performance. Okay? Why is it doing that? That's really what you want to know. Why is it doing this? And I don't have, without looking, I'd go to the news and find out. Do you know why?
Somebody said something about a possible split coming up.
That could do it. So there's nothing necessarily fundamental. What you want to do is
How about the sector as a whole? What is the sector and how does that look?
Okay, this sector is in the food meat products sector. The food dash meat product sector. And all the commodities, if you take a look, have been beat up most of the year. So the question is have they been beat up enough? Where it didn't hurt Hormel at all. Hormel avoided much of the pain that the other. For instance, one of the stocks in this sector Sanderson Farms. They're in the same sector. That stock went down for the year and just started recently to start to improve. Many of the food companies just recently started to improve. You got Pilgrim's Pride. That stock is in the same sector. The PBC. That fell all year long. So J.J. Hormel has been the one who hasn't. It's been the odd man out. And so if you own it, I would put a tight stop on it. I don't necessarily sell it because it's still moving up, but you don't want to let it fall, that's for sure. You want a tight stop. Okay?
Okay, thank you, Steve.
Thanks, JJ. I appreciate it. That's Hormel Food, symbol HRL. Yeah, if you're looking at all the other same industry, Tyson, Sanderson Farms and Pilgrim's Pride, those are the same. Tyson has done very well recently. So there's, it's not all bad, but most of that sector has been down for the year. At InvestTalk Insider, you now have access to investment resources that can come straight to your desk. You can come straight to you if you want. The special watch lists are created. I create them. Me and Justin both create them to give investors an idea of different types of investment ideas and what the pros are doing, explore different asset classes. The webinar archive provides access to our lessons in our webinars, which are taken from our seminars. And there's chart lessons, how to read a chart, different types of lessons if you're an InvestTalk insider. To sign up, it's free. Go to investtalk.com.
Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. That's the title of Steve's book. It's a no-nonsense beginner's guide to the world of buying and selling stocks. What moves stock prices? Do I need to learn about economics? Can I keep it simple? These are questions, and many others, that are answered in an easy-to-read format. Maybe this is a gift idea for yourself. Look for the recommended books list on investtalk.com.
Okay, let's do InvestTalk Personal, the day-to-day money choices we make that can have lasting impact on all our money. While not everyone needs or even wants help with their retirement savings from a professional, certain types of people stand to gain the most. Now, of those, of those certain type of people, it's the time it takes which is the problem. There's the time factor. If you're a busy professional, you know, you're working 80, 90 hours a week. If you're a techie in San Jose, in the valley up there, you have very little time to pay attention to your money. Or if you're a family person, you want to spend time with your family. You don't have a lot of time. You got growing kids. You want to spend time with them. It's, you know, that doesn't mean for people who have the time can do this. It's not, they can manage your own money. It's not rocket science. Okay, but you do have to spend the time. And of course, if you can't, there are two types of financial professionals, the financial advisor and investment advisor. Now, KPP, my firm, for instance, is a registered investment advisor. But we also help our clients with a broad range of financial services. We have real estate. If you want some real estate advice, you know, you want to sell your property, buy a property, we can help with that. What is our primary goal is to manage assets for clients. Okay, and so how do we get paid? That is very important when it comes to financial people that are helping you. How do they get paid? And that's where you got to be really, really careful. Okay. Now, many people are approaching retirement. This is what I've noticed, I've seen. As people approach retirement, they get a little more concerned. They don't want to be as risky in the market, but they still want to, maybe they want a stream of income from their retirement money. How do they do that? How do they build that kind of portfolio that has less risk and yet provides some growth potential and gives us constant stream of income. Well, that's the time when a lot of people need help because you can't do it yourself. And if you try, many people get messed up here, you know, because they think it's easy to buy bonds or something, you know. It's not that simple, and you have to understand all the ins and outs. And I will tell you this, if you buy individual bonds as an individual, you're going to get bad prices. They're going to offer you poor bonds that are not nearly as good as they offer institutional buyers of bonds. So you got to be really careful. Go to InvestTalk. Investopedia has a series of videos that might help, you know, about life-changing situations and managing money. I like investopedia.com. It's really interesting. And that's InvestTalk Personal. Do you have questions, professional services, like myself, might help with? Give me a call. 888-99-CHART, or you can send me an email by clicking on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
Our podcast distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Get a no-cost expert opinion and explore your retirement options. Using Skype or the old-fashioned telephone, Steve can review your retirement portfolio and offer some suggestions. There's no charge, but he makes a limited number of appointments, so schedule your time. Toll-free, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, or go online to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting.
Okay, there's been some recent studies about reverse mortgages that I hope we can get to before the end of the show. Let's go to Gene in North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Are you there?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Yes, before I get to my question, I just had a quick comment about, you mentioned about how Hormel was going up this year and
yes.
Sanderson Farms and Pilgrim's Pride was going down. I think the reason why Sanderson Farms and Pilgrim's Pride were going down, they both suffered from the avian flu with turkeys.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
And Hormel, I guess, deals more with pigs than beef, I guess, or cattle or something.
They do. Yeah, especially, yeah, yeah. They do. Yeah, well, that might be so. I mean, all commodities have been weak this whole year, so... You know, you would think that they would all suffer, but maybe not. It could be that specific, but appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. My question deals with, you mentioned earlier today about how, in general, the U.S. market stock market goes up. I think you said it was 60-some-odd percent every year.
No, I'm wondering, how does that... 66% of the time they go up every year.
Right.
Okay.
I'm wondering how that compares long-term to other foreign developed markets, stock markets, like the FTSE 100 or the Nikkei 225. I mean, do those go up as much, or is it something unique to the U.S. market?
I don't, I've never really studied that. And I would suspect that they would act differently. Maybe the German market and the English market might be similar. But I don't know about Japan, Nikkei.
Japan sort of peaked in the 80s as a bubble and never really came back.
Yeah. 1989, I think they topped. I mean, it was really crazy back then. I don't know if you remember that time. Doesn't sound like you're old enough, but it was crazy. Their property values in Japan were insane. You think we're insane? You should have seen it back then. There, and Japan was everybody was worried that Japan was going to own the world back then.
That's right.
And then they hit that problem. Then they had deflation for years. And one of the fundamental reasons why Japan is doing poorly long term is because
they never cleared up their banking system, right?
They never cleared that up. But more fundamental than that is they have a very clear aging population, and they don't allow immigration, very little.
Right.
They don't have enough young people to drive their economy coming in. So
I believe there was a stat that said they have more adult diapers being sold than diapers for children.
I believe that. Anyway, so I think Gene, I don't think so. I only can speak to the U.S. market.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Gene. Appreciate the call. Thanks for listening. That's Gene, North Carolina podcast listener. Hopefully you'll be one of them. Reverse mortgages. Okay, we've talked about them in the past, but we haven't talked about them in a long time because they're not in the news. And whenever something's not in the news, I like to bring it up because it's not that it's lost of its importance. It's just that no one's interested right now, and that's when you really should think about it. There's been some recent studies about reverse mortgages. And a reverse mortgage is a house that you live in. You can borrow money against that house in a reverse mortgage and never have to pay it back as long as you're living in that house. So you can die in your house and never have to pay it back. When you die, that whoever inherits a house has to pay it back, and they can get a regular mortgage to pay it back or sell the house. And it's a non-recourse loan, so you never, ever owe more money than the house is worth. Now, people don't like to do that, borrow more money against my house, and it's an expensive loan. But there's some changes in the law to make it less expensive. But recent study says that maybe it's a good idea to do a reverse mortgage early in retirement and use that money instead. Remember, you don't ever have to pay a dime. You don't pay a dime after you have it. You don't have to pay it back. And then use that money to live and leave your invested money alone so it can continue to grow. And also, maybe don't take Social Security, but postpone that until age 70 so it can continue to grow. So at 70, so the study says maybe you should think about maybe taking a reverse mortgage early. Now, that's something to seriously think about, but don't jump into it. Hour's up. Remember, you can see a long list of books that we recommend to help you gain knowledge and perspective about managing money and investing. Just look for the recommended books on investtalk.com. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening, and let's pick it up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.